पदान्तिकम् वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नमो ओं विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन्नितिनामिने नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण। So we're talking some very interesting topics: lust, greed, anger, envy, pride, illusion. Not very pleasant topics to talk about, but what to do? We have to deal with them. So we have to discuss them, and we have to know how to transcend them. We spoke in the last previous session about the description that Krishna gives in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So let's take some of these items one by one and discuss them briefly. We saw that the general understanding of the word lust is any desire separate from the desire to serve Krishna. Any desire to gratify our own senses independent of Krishna is lust. And any attempt to serve Krishna by using our senses to please Him is love. So there is kama, which is lust, and there is prema, which is love. So how does one transform lust into love? Very simply, by engaging the senses to serve Krishna. People in general in this world, being driven by lust, work hard day and night to enjoy sense gratification. So devotees also work hard, but for Krishna. And in working hard and engaging one's senses, mind, intelligence for Krishna's service in a very favorable mood to please Krishna, then that lust is transformed into love, so that kama becomes prema. So this is the magical transformation that takes place simply by coming in contact with the object of all love, that is Krishna. If we simply do that, that is sufficient. Because Krishna is all pure. By coming in connection with Krishna, the all pure, all the impurities in our heart go away. Now, generally, when people think of Krishna, I mean those who are not devotees, immediately they criticize Krishna. What is the first thing that people criticize Krishna for? Ras Lila, you said it. The first thing that comes to people's mind when they want to criticize Krishna is Ras Lila. But they think that the Ras Lila is just another activity involving ordinary men and women of this world. But the Ras Lila is nothing like that. It is a completely spiritual relationship of pure prema, love, on the spiritual platform. The gopis are all liberated souls. Some of them are eternally liberated, associates of Krishna coming from Goloka Vrindavan. And some of them have become liberated and have got the association of Krishna and the other liberated souls, so they are also actually liberated. So this is not an affair going on between mundane men and women. It's something on the spiritual platform. And the proof of that is that great celibate sannyasis and monks like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course he is Krishna himself, but he is playing the role of a sannyasi, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Nimbarkacharya, and many of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan like Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, they all immensely glorified the Rasalila as being the topmost pastime of Krishna, the most purifying and exalted of all pastimes of Krishna. And they always talked about it, they thought about it, they meditated on it, they described it. Now what business would sannyasis who are celibate have to do with an ordinary affair between a man and a woman? So if the relationship between Krishna and gopis had been one of ordinary lust, what would all these great saints have had to do with it? Why would they have been so interested to read it, study it, describe it, glorify it, and consider it the highest of Krishna's pastimes? So obviously the answer is that it is not something mundane. It is something very, very exalted and is on the pure spiritual platform. In fact, only one whose heart is completely free of lust will be able to appreciate the pastimes of the gopis with Krishna completely. So those who want to be purified of lust, what can they do? So Srila Prabhupada one time, he said, when lust emerges in the heart, of course Prabhupada said different things at different times. This is one of the things he said. When lust emerges in the heart, think of the gopis. Think of the gopis of Vrindavan. Now what a wonderful thing. Now ordinary people who are unacquainted with devotional life, they'll say, what kind of strange method is this for overcoming lust? And Prabhupada said, no, think of the gopis. Why would Prabhupada say this if the gopis were ordinary ladies of this world? Because their love for Krishna is completely pure, is on the spiritual platform, so they are completely purified. And what to speak of thinking of Krishna, even if you think of the gopis, and especially if you think of the gopis, then one becomes free of lust. However, Prabhupada has cautioned that we should not prematurely try to hear and read about the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis, because so long as our hearts are not free from lust, there is a likelihood, a very good likelihood, that we may also ascribe such tendencies to Krishna and the gopis, and it may have the opposite result in our heart. But the fact is, if one hears faithfully from the right sources about Krishna and the gopis in a simple way, then one actually becomes purified. Something very, very interesting. Otherwise, lust in this world causes degradation. And meditation on these affairs of Krishna causes elevation. So it goes to show the nature of Krishna's pastimes. Many, many great sages in history have had difficulties and fallen down. You've heard the story of Vishwamitra Muni. He performed penances for so many years. But then Menaka came along. And then his austerities were broken. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear of the story of King Yayati. He was a very powerful king. I won't go into the whole pastime. It's quite a long pastime. But eventually, because somehow the father of his wife, Shukracharya became angry with him because his daughter Sharmishtha complained to him about her because he had also developed interest in her friend Devyani. So Shukracharya cursed him that because you are so full of lust, may you become an old man. So Yayati was horrified. He said, oh, if I'd suddenly become an old man, but I have so many desires to fulfill, what is going to happen? So desperate was he, somehow or the other, to continue to want to enjoy this world that he went to his sons. He had 5 sons. And he approached each of them and said, look, I've got this curse and I've become an old man. But when I begged forgiveness, then Shukracharya said, look, I can't withdraw the curse completely, but I can relent up to a point that if someone is willing to exchange his youth for your old age, then you can get your youth back. So then he went to his sons, who were young men, and he said, will you exchange your youth for my old age? And then afterwards, when I've enjoyed life sufficiently, then I'll return your youth to you and take back my old age. So what do you think the sons would have said? Sorry, wrong number. No, I also want to enjoy this world. If I don't enjoy it when I'm young, then what's the use of everything? So ultimately, there was one king who agreed, one son. What was his name? Who wants a gulab jamun? Puru. Puru. So Puru agreed finally. And then Yayati became a young man again, and Puru became old. And then Yayati continued to try to enjoy sense gratification for a long time, but at the end of it he came back to his son and said, it's pointless. I've just wasted my life. At that time, when I was cursed, I should have focused on Krishna consciousness and become a pure devotee. But I wasted so many years, fruitlessly. For what? After enjoying this sense gratification for so many years, I'm still not satisfied. I'm not happy. I'm not peaceful. So anyway, at that time, he returned the youth of Puru to him and took back his old age and continued to. He became very active in Krishna consciousness. So this lust is such a thing that it burns in the heart of the living entity, and the more one indulges in it, the more powerful it becomes. The stronger it is, just like when one pours ghee or oil into the fire. The fire doesn't get extinguished. Rather, the oil blazes even more. And it doesn't necessarily automatically go away with age. It remains. Unless one does something spiritual, these material desires don't go away. There is a verse, Angam galitam palitam mundam dashanavihinam jatam tundam vriddho yati grihitva dandam tadapinamunchatyasha pindam. In this verse, one saint has described the condition of somebody who may be old but is not spiritual. Angam galitam, that is, his body has become worn out. Palitam mundam, his hair has become grey or white. Dashanavihinam jatam tundam, so inside his mouth the teeth have all fallen out. Vriddho yati, there goes the old man. Grihitva dandam, holding a stick, a walking stick. This is his condition. But tadapina, in spite of that, munchatyasha pindam, he's a bundle of material desires. So it's not that automatically these things are going to go away. They are not going to go away. They've been with us for millions of lives, and they will stick to us. So we have to get rid of them. So the only way to get rid of them actually is to engage all our senses in Krishna's service faithfully, and use these little tips that Srila Prabhupada has given to all of us, and pray to Krishna that we can overcome these things. Love is sublime. So the sublimation of lust is transformed into love, Krishna prema. Then there is anger. So there was kamaha, krodhaha, anger. What is the relationship between lust and anger? Which shloka in Bhagavad Gita? Dhyayato vishayan pumsaha sangasteshu pajayate sangat sanjayate kamaha kamat krodho bhijayate krodhat bhavati sammohaha sammohat smriti vibhramaha smriti bhramshat buddhinasho buddhinashat pranashyati. So many of you are going to get many gulab jamuns. I don't know if we have the stock. But anyway, it's to your credit. Sometime you will get it. Dhyayato vishayan punsaha. So one meditates on the sense objects, contemplates on them. Then one becomes attracted to them, attached to them. Sangasteshu pajayate. Then from such attachment comes a desire to enjoy them. Sangat sanjayate kamaha. So the lust develops, or the material desire to enjoy this world in different ways develop when we contemplate on the objects of the senses and develop attachment to them. Kamat krodho bhijayate. So when that kama or all these material desires in our heart, they are not fulfilled, then that leads to anger. You can see, sometimes you want to do something and you're frustrated in your attempt. Don't you get angry? So when our desires get interrupted or frustrated, then we become angry. So anger is a natural consequence of lust, because lust cannot always be fulfilled. In fact, it can never be fulfilled. So anger comes naturally. Many times people ask, devotees especially ask the question, what do? I get angry so often. So the answer is, you may get angry, but don't stay angry. Come out of it as soon as you can. In the material world, they say when you get angry, just count sheep or count the stars. You know, they say like that, right? By counting sheep or counting the stars, then you get so absorbed in that you forget your anger. But we have a better solution. We chant Hare Krishna. Prabhupada had some other nice tips to conquer anger. He said, when anger overcomes you, he's angry about something. When desire is frustrated, one becomes angry. When there is anger, we have to get it out. So, where was I? Yes, Prabhupada said, when anger overcomes you, immediately think of how angry Krishna was when he was Narsimhadev and how he killed Hiranyakashipu. Think of the Lord's anger and you lose your anger. Think of how the Lord was so angry when he came to tear the Hiranyakashipu's body to pieces. Just imagine Lord Narasimha, they were roaring with anger, the very personification of anger. Who can be angry like Narasimhadev? What is our anger compared to Narasimhadev's anger? His anger was so phenomenal, even Brahma and Lord Shiva could not stand in front of him. They were trembling to just see that anger of the Lord. So therefore we should think of Lord Narasimhadev when we become angry. At another time, Srila Prabhupada commented, when you get angry, use your spiritual intelligence, your Krishna conscious intelligence, to curb your anger. He said, because anger can cause devastation. It can cause havoc. There was an incident that happened many years ago, maybe 15 years ago or so, I remember, where there was one couple. They got into a fight, quarrel. And the quarrel became so heated And the husband became so angry and he was so beyond control, he didn't know what to do in his anger. And the quarrel may have been, one of the reasons may have been their child. So in his fit of anger, he lost all his intelligence, right? Krodhat bhavati sammohaha, sammohat smriti vibhramaha. Sammoha means delusion. From delusion comes bewilderment of memory, smriti vibhramaha. Smriti bhramshat, when the memory is lost, buddhi nashat pranashyati. So one's intelligence becomes ruined. One doesn't know what one is doing. That happens in anger, isn't it? We do so many things when we are angry and then repent later. Oh, why did I say this? Why did I do this? So anger is a thing that destroys our intelligence completely. So this man, in his fit of anger, he picked up his son and threw him out the balcony. It's a real story. It was a multi-storied building. He must have been somewhere on some floor. The wife was angry, fighting, but when she saw this, she was so horrified. She started running down the stairs because this child fell down. So she went, as she ran down the stairs, it took her a while to come there. And of course, the child was lying on the ground. He was dead. By then, the husband realized what he had done. He jumped off the balcony. So when this lady came running down and she saw her son, she saw her husband coming down. This is a true story that happened. This goes to show, these are ordinary people like you and me. Ordinary people of this world. We have little quarrels and fights. An extreme case, but a true case, to show how anger can destroy our intelligence and what devastation it can cause. So therefore, use of one's spiritual intelligence and taking shelter deeply of Krishna is very important. If we don't control anger when it's in the budding stage, it can grow to any degree. The next time we are angry with somebody or two people are angry at each other, at least one of them should calm down. When the other person calms down, then let this person blow over. But we should immediately curb it with spiritual intelligence, Prabhupada says. Otherwise, anger will cause ruin. Last time I may have told you the story of King Alexander and the yogi. Did I tell you that? No. So you know that King Alexander came all the way from Macedonia, near Greece and so on. He came to India conquering different lands, including Persia and so on. He reached the banks of the river Indus, Sindhu. And by then the soldiers were so tired, they said, now we want to go back. We can't just continue on like this. We've traveled all the way from Macedonia here, in Europe. So Alexander said, all right, let's go back. But then he wanted to carry something back from India which he could show to the people in his land. And he had always heard of India's spiritual culture. He had heard of these yogis, people who have all kinds of mystic powers and they meditate in the forest. So he went into the forest to find some yogis and he found one yogi who was sitting absorbed in deep meditation. So he went with some people with him, including some local people. And then he told this yogi, come back with me to my country, because people of my country would like to see you. They would like to see what a yogi is. So the yogi had no interest in going there. He wanted to just stay and do his austerities. He didn't want to get disturbed like this. So he said, no, I won't come. Alexander tried to persuade him again and again, but he wouldn't listen. He was firm. Then Alexander was getting angry now. Finally, the yogi replied to him very firmly, saying, no, I will be here. I will not come with you. So Alexander became very angry. His ego was hurt. So he removed the sword from its sheath and says, do you know who I am? So very calmly the yogi replied, yes, you are the servant of my servant. Now, Alexander was already very angry. And now this was too much for him. But nevertheless, somehow he had some intelligence, so he controlled himself. So this is a very curious answer, very funny answer. What does he mean by this? It's outrageous, but still let me find out what he means by this. So what do you mean by this? So he said, look, you are a servant of anger. Because anger has controlled you. So you are a slave of anger. I have controlled my anger. So I am the master of anger. So therefore you are the servant of my servant. Did you get it? So we should be the master of anger, not the servant of anger. In other words, what does it mean to be the master of anger? It means that you can use anger productively, usefully, for some good purpose also. Can you use anger for some good purpose? Is it possible? No? How many people say no? Please raise your hand. One here. Anyone else? Two. Anyone else? Three. Okay, you lose your gulab jamuns. So anger can be used for something good. For a good means what? For somebody's benefit. Krishna consciousness is the highest benefit. Can you give some examples of how anger can be used for good? Hanuman. What did Hanuman do? He burnt Lanka, so he used it in Ram's service. Similarly, Arjuna used anger in Krishna's service in the battle of Kurukshetra. But in day-to-day life, can you mention how anger can be used for a useful purpose if you are controlling your anger? Use it as an instrument, not that you become the instrument of anger. To defeat Mayavadis. Okay, good. One time there was one devotee who was very quarrelsome by nature. So devotees approached Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, this devotee quarrels with everybody. So Prabhupada said, send him to Rishikesh and let him quarrel with all the Mayavadis there and fight with them. Why do you say God is impersonal? Why do you say God is light? And instead of fighting with devotees, let him go and fight there and use his anger over there. What else? Yes. To discipline children, yes, but very carefully that has to be used. Generally, sometimes what happens? We become the servant of anger, then we lose control and then we do all sorts of things. Now, if it is done in a very controlled way, if it's a machine, imagine you're using a machine that you can control. Or if it's a car you're driving, you can use it for good. But if the car goes out of control, then there'll be devastation. So anger is like that. If you use anger in a controlled way for a higher purpose, when you are in control of your senses, then that anger can be useful. But if we lose control of ourselves, then anger becomes our master. Then we don't know what we are doing. So when you're disciplining children, for example, then sometimes anger is necessary, but rarely. But it can be used for good. So anyway, this is about anger, lust, anger, greed. Greed is also like another fire that burns in our heart, wanting more, more, more and more. There's no limit to how much we want. For anger, by the way, what was the antidote? We had mentioned, what was the pure equivalent? Compassion. For lust, it was love. And for greed, satisfaction. So by spiritual intelligence, when we have greed, I want this also, I want that, I want more money, I want more, more. We should use our spiritual intelligence to understand, no, let me be satisfied with what I have. Because even if I have more, it's not that I'm going to be happy. You know what Lord Vamanadeva said when he came as a dwarf brahmachari in front of Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj asked him, yes, you ask me for anything since you've come for charity. And Vamanadeva said, I just want 3 paces of land. And Bali Maharaj laughed and said, you are a Brahmana, you are a Brahmachari, but you're really not intelligent at all. I am the king, I could have given you anything. I could have given you a whole planet. But you're asking me 3 steps of land and you're a dwarf. What are your 3 steps also? So Vamanadeva replied, if one is not satisfied with what one has, one will never ever be satisfied with whatever one gets. Even if one obtains the rulership of the entire universe, one will not be happy. So sometimes devotees ask the question, how much is enough? When we want more, we say, okay, up to this much we want, then do we stop here or do we stop there? Do we stop there? Where do we stop? What's the answer? Stop here. Wherever you are, here and now. Stop in the sense that don't have unnecessary desires for more and more. Be satisfied with what you have. Whatever it may be, less or more, in terms of your material assets. According to your destiny, wealth will come or it will not come. Rather focus your attention more on becoming Krishna conscious, because that is what human life is meant for. You know how they capture monkeys? One of the ways in which they capture monkeys, the hunters? What? Put a trail of bananas in a trap. But the monkeys are very intelligent. They understand there's a trap there. It's not so easy. So what he does is, the hunter, he gets a narrow-necked flask, a mud pot with a narrow neck like that. And then the monkey sitting up on the tree watching, he brings a lot of delicious berries and drops them one by one, looking at the monkeys watching. Oh, one berry, two berries, going in there. And the flask is fixed to the ground. So the monkey is watching that. And then the hunter goes away. The monkey has seen that. He's waiting for the hunter to leave. When the hunter leaves, he goes and hides behind a place. He doesn't go away completely. The monkey comes down, looks here and there, puts his hand inside and grabs the berries. Now he grabs 3 or 4 berries and wants to pull it out, but he can't pull it out because the neck of the flask is narrow. But he's greedy, so he doesn't want to let go. He wants all the 3 or 4 berries. So he holds on like that. Meanwhile, the hunter starts approaching. Okay, I've got my trap. All the monkey has to do is let go. He can even get away with 1 berry. But he wants all 3, all 4. So he stays there trying to pull, pull, pull. And the hunter comes, catches him. This is how greed traps us, the desire to want more and more and more. So we should be satisfied, even as devotees. Every time you want to buy something, think, do I really need it? The latest gadget, the latest clothes, the latest this or that. Don't fall prey to unlimited consumerism. Or buy only things that you really need. If you don't really need it, no point in buying it and just spending money unnecessarily. So greed can be countered by satisfaction. So there's lust, anger, greed, then pride. So pride, we've talked quite a bit about it. And pride can be conquered by humility. Now pride also is madness, as we've discussed. And when one is proud, one talks like an intoxicated person. One doesn't know what one is speaking. One speaks anything because one has delusions of grandeur. You know, sometimes when you go to a place where there are mentally challenged people, and somebody may say, well, I'm King Napoleon. And we smile off and say he's just mentally challenged. Because what is so funny about this person saying he's Napoleon? What is funny? He's not Napoleon. But in all seriousness, he thinks he's Napoleon and he says he's Napoleon. So everybody thinks, oh, he's mad. So similarly, we think of ourselves to be this body. And when this body, by the grace of the Lord, is able to accomplish something unusual or extraordinary, then we start thinking, I am so great, I am the king, I am this and I am that. So how is it different from that person who is claiming that he is Napoleon? It's like a madman speaking, because it's not real, it's not true. So pride also can work in such ways. Pride can destroy one's intelligence, and all the good qualities can get destroyed when there is pride. And you've heard the proverb, pride cometh before the fall. And the higher you are, the harder you fall. So therefore one has to be very conscious that pride can come anytime. And when pride comes, immediately we have to think that we are the servant of Krishna. This is not our position. What is our position in this whole creation? We have to use our spiritual intelligence. We are tiny little beings here. Of course, there's many stories also that can be told about each of these things, but time is also a factor. So we need to constantly, by our actions and our thoughts, remain humble so that we can conquer this thing of pride. We have to help each other. Of course, we should not become proud of being humble either. So he was so humble that he was proud of it. And after pride comes envy. Oh yes, envy. Burns in the heart. How bad it feels when somebody else is doing better than us. Very painful for a materialistic heart. For a pure heart, it's very joyful. But for a materialistic heart, very painful. It is said that when you have envy, then this envy does all the damage that you can, that is possible in your life without you having a single enemy. So envy acts like thousands of enemies for you. And when you are envious of someone, even if you are a very wealthy person, you are more miserable than a poverty-stricken person. Because that envy has done to you something that even poverty could not do. And the interesting thing is that the person who envies suffers, but the person whom he is envying, that person is blissful. He doesn't know. He doesn't know. He's not concerned. But the person who's envying, he is the one who suffers. One time in India, I saw one of these slogans on the back of the truck. In the trucks, they have sometimes very colorful and interesting slogans that they put. One of them was in Hindi, which in English means, it says, if you have to burn, burn like a lamp. Here they used burn in the sense of, if you have to burn, meaning don't burn in envy of others. Don't be jealous of others. So if you have to burn, burn like a lamp. That means a lamp shines for giving light to the world. Light means knowledge. For giving hope and benefit to the world. That means we should sacrifice our energies and our life for helping others, giving knowledge to others. Not for being jealous of others. So envy is something very dangerous. One cannot get entrance into Goloka Vrindavan unless one is freed from envy. That is the visa we need. Nothing in this world comes free. Entrance into the kingdom of God also comes when freedom from envy is there. Dharma prochita kaitavutra paramo nirmat saranam satam. So this Bhagavad Dharma that is given the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for those who are freed from envy. nirmatsara. So we see that the great devotees of the Lord are completely free from envy. The six Goswamis living together in Vrindavan, they live together with so much love and trust and mutual cooperation. There was not a trace of envy or jealousy amongst them. And lastly, illusion. Illusion means to think oneself to be the body. Illusion is so powerful that even in the midst of a miserable situation, we think ourselves happy. Prabhupada used to tell the story of how Indra was one time cursed. Indra is the king of demigods. He was cursed to be a hog. And because he had been Indra before, so naturally when he was born in the community of hogs, he was the king of the hogs. And when you have a king, then you have many queens and you have many princes and princesses who are born to you. So he had a big family, a big many subjects in his kingdom. So he was a king hog. And time was passing by, and Narad Muni was getting worried. The quota is over. He was cursed to be there for a certain time, but now it's time for him to come back. I mean, someone has to rule. Heaven has been vacant for quite a while. So Narad Muni came down to Indra, who was in the form of a hog, and said, "Indra, time to come back." "Oh, Narad Muni, how can I just leave? Just look, all these subjects are so dependent on me. And look at these young ones, oink, oink, they're going up, they need me so much. What will they do without me? Just see how they're helplessly dependent on me now. If I just go like this, I'll be doing so much injustice here." So each time Narad Muni came, Indra had some reason. Finally, Narad Muni had to cut off his head and send him back to the heavenly planets. So illusion can be so strong, so powerful. So, just as greed can be conquered by satisfaction, and pride can be conquered by humility, and envy can be conquered by appreciation of others' good qualities and appreciation of Krishna, similarly, illusion can be conquered by knowledge. So, it is very important for us to regularly hear discourses, very important for us to read Srila Prabhupada's books. Then we will be able to conquer the illusion. Of course, the subject is very large. It can go on for a couple of days more. But we have things to do. We have our families, you have your jobs and other things to do, other devotional services to do as well. So we'll halt here for now. I think we crossed the time limit for the questions and we have to have our exercise now, isn't it? Okay, so what we can do maybe is that if time permits later after the exercise, then we can have some questions and answers. Being the last day, we can, and everybody's eaten so much breakfast, that I think if lunch is a little late, I don't think there'll be any problem. So we'll have some exercise now, yes? Okay, so we'll have the exercise. Something for you to do. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Okay, as Maharaji said, we are about to undertake our second practical exercise. Now, we've just spent the last day and a half, Maharaji, talking about both the divine and the demoniac traits and qualities. So, what we're about to do is a practical exercise now, for which I need for you, like yesterday, to form groups of 10. 10. Could you please do that amongst yourselves quickly? Thank you.